Hi, friends. Hi, family. Hello, people whom I love, who I don't even know too, strangers alike. This episode is a little unusual. You'll hear all about it. I don't want to explain more than I already do because you guys, this one is a lot. It's 2 freaking hours. It's giving me a vulnerability hangover. I'm a little bit scared too. So I'm really proud of it, actually. I back it 100%. But after listening back to it, I'm really putting myself in a Mormon person's shoes right now. And I know how to do that because I was one for a lot of years. So I'm putting myself back into that version of myself that I was. And I'm realizing that I think I'd be offended if I listened to this or triggered. It would elicit an emotional response. And I don't want to do any harm here. So this is a trigger warning for my Mormon friends, families, listeners, whoever you are, wherever you are. If you're Mormon, I don't think that you would enjoy hearing this one. There's no anti-Mormon literature, or it's not like going into all the sacred things at all. It's just my experience that I had inside of it and how I chose to leave it. So there's not like any bad information. It's not bashing it at all. But I recognize that it could be offensive to some people, and I love you and feel the need to let you know beforehand. So, well, it's a doozy. Let's just get into it. Fair warning. Turn it off now if you're not into it. Hi, guys. It is me, Wesley, and it's just me today because I am doing the solo I've been putting off since day one. So since the day I started this podcast on January 1st of this year, 2020, I have been asked every single day to expand on my faith transition because I've flippantly mentioned it here and there. Like it's been said, I've definitely said it, but I've never talked about it to you. So whether it's in my DMs or emails, every single day since January 1st, someone, somewhere, somehow has asked me to really dive into this topic. And today is, the middle of October. It's been 10 months of me hearing that this is what you guys want the most from me. And it's been 10 months of me constantly and consistently being like, no, nuh-uh, nope, not going here. Here, there's an issue though. So Mormonism keeps getting brought up here by guests or myself, just like little bits and pieces. And I'm dodging it. Just so you know, behind the scenes, I am dodging it. It is taking so much of my energy to dodge this specific topic. And I think that by me hopefully addressing this just this one time and telling my story, then it can kind of fade out. That's my hope. We'll see what actually happens. But as these podcast episodes have gone on, so have the requests for me to go here specifically. And the requests have gotten heavier, and more of my guests are bringing up pieces of their Mormon stories. Specifically after Nate Wins and Kelly Packers and Jessica Janae's, the requests for me to go here from the listeners, from you guys, have turned into demands, for real. And it's funny because I'm recognizing I have cultivated a little group of listeners that have been calling me out on my own shit. And to be honest, I hate this, but I love it too, because I feel like you guys really know me. And this one girl specifically was like, hey, you're an open book. You've gone everywhere. I know you by now. I've listened to 36 of your episodes. I feel you intentionally skirting around this issue. And I was like, damn. You guys know me so much. So you could feel me intentionally going around this big elephant in the room. And because I do live in Utah, and Utah is the Mormon capital of the world. It's predominantly Mormon. This is where I pull my guests from, the podcast people. So I'd go as far as estimating that 90% of my guests have been Mormon, or at one point were Mormon, or they have been touched by Mormonism in one way or another. And honestly, it's just kind of like off limits. Like I said, like, I don't want to go here. I've shelved entire episodes because they're just too Mormon heavy, or maybe they weren't portraying the Mormon culture in a positive light. And why? Let's talk about why I haven't been wanting to go here. And I have to say, like, please don't worry. This podcast is, it will not become a controversial religious discussion week after week. Like, I promise you it won't. I feel like I have to do this once and then put it to bed for good. So really, it's not going to be this heavy after this. And why have I shelved entire episodes? Because there's a lot to that decision for me. And I'll just be blunt. Because in the one and only time I've ever brought up Mormonism on my Instagram stories, you may have seen it. It was recently, but my mom found a time capsule from when I was 13 years old that I did as a church activity. And I was supposed to open the time capsule on my wedding night, but she just found it last month and gave it to me. And I decided to open it on Instagram stories because it was hilarious. It was so funny. Like, my 13-year-old self who made it was cringy, to say the very least. But there, of course, there was a lot of church stuff in there because it was a church activity. And it just, it was, so there was a list of to-dos in this time capsule. And it was like, to-do, marry only a returned missionary, dress modestly, have a husband who's good in the church. There was a lot in this time capsule about my white rose being intact, which was actually talking about my virginity, which would be a gift I would give to my husband on our wedding night. And then it mentioned, like, color schemes and the perfect wedding and having perfect kids and the whole kit and caboodle. It just was hilarious, to be honest. But then after a minute, it got weird. Like, a lot of feelings came up. And truthfully, it is weird because I have a 12-year-old now. And I was only 13 when we did that exercise. So it was hitting so, it hits right now. Because we have never discussed at length the importance of our kids' virginity and how our girl's body is a gift for a man. Not once. Her body is hers and only hers. It's not our body. And it's not her future partner's body. It's not a gift to be given to anybody. Her body is her body. It's her gift. If it's anyone's gift, it's their own gift. But when we do talk about our kids' bodies, it's regarding health and safety and smart choices, and nothing about their bodies determine their worth or their value. Nothing. Not the size, not the shape, not the color, and most definitely not their virginity. And it's just a lot. So anyway, so I posted the whole discovery, and never in my 10 years online, or however long I've been doing this stuff, have I ever received more hate in my life. And I'm not talking like a rude DM here or there. Like, women went through the entirety of my posts all the way back to the beginning and ripped me to shreds. They commented on how I'm such a hypocrite and I was evil. Oh, attention-seeking bitch was one. Like, that was my personal favorite, that I'm an attention-seeking bitch. But they started threads on each post mocking me and laughing at me. Like, and I finally engaged. I was like, yo, what is going on? Because this is like guerrilla warfare. Like it was like tactical and organized. And someone responded and they were like, if you're going to openly criticize the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, then you should be prepared to get openly criticized online back, because they would defend the church till they die. It's their job. And honestly, I get that. I don't even blame them. They were taught to defend the church at all times. But here's the thing, though. I didn't criticize their church. Not once, nor will I hear. All I did was open a flippin' tin can that the church made for me. And I laughed at my 13-year-old self, who filled out all the church-appointed papers. Like, who was so worried about needing to be perfect. I needed to be the perfect girl who had the perfect husband so he could hopefully accept my white rose on our honeymoon. And all by the time I was 20. That's what my 13-year-old self wanted. And it's ironic to me that I did, in fact, get married at 20. Exactly like my 13-year-old self hoped. But I also just know that that little girl version of me did not think I'd be marrying a non-missionary boy and shoving my 4-month pregnant body into my modest wedding dress in a non-temple wedding ceremony. Like, this my 13-year-old self did not see coming. But what I also didn't see coming was this type of like methodical and calculated attack and hate and bullying that I got just from sharing an old time capsule. They laid into me. They went so low, they were going for my kids too. And when I say they, it was a they. They were a group of Mormon women. And I'm feeling like they have a private Facebook group, kind of like a community watch program, where if they get tipped off that anyone isn't portraying their church in the way that they want it to be portrayed, then they attack. And this is a story I'm making up in my head. It feels like they all knew each other and that it was like, it was a tactical, like it was methodical. It was intentional, guerrilla warfare. It definitely wasn't their first rodeo doing this. That is for sure. Which is weird because I swear most Mormons are the kindest people on earth. And I really mean that. This was a special little mean hate group. I'm this is not Mormons. This was a special group of women. So I was surprised and I deleted and I blocked every comment and every person that were in on it because I don't have room in my life for that type of negativity. I just don't. And I believe in protecting my energetic space. So blocking for me is a way to care and to protect myself. It's an act of self-love. So I think you can imagine why going here brings up an enormous amount of anxiety for me. Because as I'm saying this right now, I am prepping for more hate than I think I can handle. Honestly, I'm sensitive. I don't think I'm cut out for this. I'm like prepping for major blowback, even though I won't be criticizing the church, because I have realized something, and it's that if you're not 100% on board with the church, then most of the LDS community thinks you're 100% against them. And I swear to you, that's not me. And by the way, this is my community. I live here. like these are like my people. And I think that there's this false narrative when people leave this faith in particular that it's like the ones who leave are bitter and they're angry for life. They want to expose all the messed up stuff and get everyone out of this religion. But I am here to tell my Mormon friends and family that this isn't everyone. And it's not everyone because it isn't me. Like, yes, I've seen super angry and bitter ex-Mormons. Absolutely. But I also know a lot who are grateful for what they learned and they are grateful for when they left. And I feel like this is a more accurate label for me because really this faith transition is more of a faith expansion because the things that felt true and authentic to me when I was raised Mormon, well, I took them right along with me when I left. The beliefs are still mine. I let go of a lot, but I still have this beautiful foundation that Mormonism gave me. I give it credit. So this is a faith expansion story, not a transition. So what did Mormonism teach me? First off, being raised Mormon taught me that I'm a daughter of God, literally. Like Christ is my brother. They know me by name. They care about me specifically. I have a purpose on earth. And none of that changed when I left the church. Maybe some Mormons believe it has, but it hasn't. Like my worth in the eyes of God has never changed. So I will tell you a little bit about how this process of deciding to go here on the show with you all has gone down. So after I got called out by the avid listeners who knew I was intentionally skirting around this, I started to reexamine my mission statement here, my purpose, because I felt, and I actually knew I was being inauthentic by withholding this. And what's funny to me now is realizing I was being a lot like my old self. Like my pre-wake-up call self. I was being palatable and not making waves and not sharing my truth in fear of major blowback. Like there was fear of me showing up as my soul self, my real self, and being rejected. And it's all fear. And fear ran my life for 26 years, so I understand fear well. But the person I am today, I operate out of a different vibration. So I realized that this is maybe one of the last nails in the coffin for me to lay my old avatar self to rest, like my representative. She served me well for a really long time. I'm grateful for her, but I'm no longer her. And I just can't go backwards in life any longer. I won't. I refuse. So also, I know that this won't be well received by a lot of people I love in my community and strangers alike. But I have to have faith in truth. because every time I've shown up in honesty, it's enhanced my life and a few others too. So I'm scared, like losing sleep scared. I'm scared people are going to take my words. They're going to twist them around. I know this as a fact. I'm scared people will think I want to pull you out of your faith, which is the furthest thing from what I want. I'm scared that people will pull. It's like I'm afraid you're going to turn this episode off right now and you're never going to turn it back on, because I bet that will happen. But I'm going to tell my truth today, regardless of all the fear, regardless of everything I might lose. I'm going to do this story anyways. So that's that. Like, I've made the decision to tell this, but it was funny because looking back, when I did finally have that green light, I was like, okay, I'm going to do this, but it's going to be half true. But every time I was in the shower, every time I tried to close my eyes, like to sleep before I would hit the pillow. And when I was like driving alone in my car, it was just anytime my mind got quiet, this topic came up, it bubbled up, but it was never the half true version like I planned on telling. It was always the whole true version. Like, this story was writing itself out in my head. I wasn't doing it. I did not want to. I don't want to. And before I was ever a podcaster, I wrote. Like, I can wear that title of writer more easily than podcaster, even at this point. And I never said I was good at writing. It's just how I process. So this thing was writing itself out in my brain, like my faith transition expansion story. And I would catch myself going here and doing this and being like, yo, what are you doing? We're not doing this. We're not going this deep, Wes. But it has been like this for months. And I would just catch myself going full throttle. And my soul and my brain and my heart were all working like against my mind, because my mind decided against this. But the rest of me, they were doing this without my mind's permission. And it became uncomfortable. So I went to God. Like I always do every morning. I write out my prayers in my prayer journal. I have a whole episode on it. It's like my meditation episode. This is my morning routine. And I have, I've done this for the last like 5 years. But it was like, hey, why do I do this? And it's because I think that prayer is talking to God and meditation is just listening and deciphering for like what is being said back to you. So I'd pray, I'd ask a question, and then I'd meditate. And this particular morning, I took it to God. I was annoyed. I was confused. So I was explaining myself to God like, hey, like I'm not going to do this all the way, because you know, people shouldn't talk about religion and politics, God. Like there's that rule. But my body keeps going fully here and I'm trying to listen to my body. But God, like, I just want you to know that this is a terrible idea for me. Like, this cannot happen. I cannot go here. My podcast cannot be about Mormonism. So I'm not going to go here all the way. But can you tell me why this keeps coming up for me? And I sat. I got quiet. I meditated. And I just listened. And this is like a, because this doesn't happen to me a lot in meditation, but when it does, I listen. So 7 clear words came to my mind that were not mine, but they were God's. The words were, write the damn thing, the whole thing. God speaks to me like I speak to me, I swear. And I actually think God is always like that. Like, I think God meets you where you are. So write the whole damn thing are maybe the words I needed to hear the most. It was the spiritual green light I needed. And it was the no going back now mark. And also, like, I took it to really write it. Like, don't write around this thing. Don't do this with kitty gloves on. We're all adults here. We can handle it. At least I hope. Like, don't do the watered down version. Just do it. Write it how it is. Let it all fall. Let it crumble. If that's what's meant to be, let it be. And whatever fear I may have about going here, I just need to drop it. Like, accept that whatever comes is going to come. So before I go any further, I have a message for my true blue believing Latter-day Saint friends and family and listeners. And if you don't know, Latter-day Saints is the proper term for Mormons. They're called the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. That's really long, so people shorten it to LDS or Mormons. But I heard recently they rebranded and you're not supposed to call them Mormons. I didn't know that till now, but I mean, I was called Mormon my whole life. But to my Mormon friends and family, this is safe. You don't have to turn this off unless you are utterly bored of it. But I want you to know that this isn't going to be a gotcha moment. like this, or I will not be divulging any anti-Mormon literature or CD history. There won't be a drop of hate about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in this podcast. There won't be information that isn't from the church-approved websites. Like, what this will be is just my story and my thoughts and feelings and experiences I had living the majority of my life in this specific religion. So that's all. And another note, I need to make my intention clear, because unlike maybe a lot of other people who share their faith transitions out of Mormonism, I don't want to be an example to you. I don't want anyone to do what I've done. No, it will not make me happy if you leave this church. Leaving was the most painful thing, one of the most painful things I've ever done, and it absolutely does not bring me joy. Finding out that others are leaving as well, like, my heart goes out to those of you who are in the middle of leaving, because it's like divorce. It is messy and painful, and there are two sides to every story. Lines are always drawn in the sand, and I don't wish this upon anyone. So if this isn't my intention, what is my intent? And it's to give people hope, because I think back to myself all those years ago when this was happening for me, and I know I really could have used someone to be like a lighthouse for me, because I felt really lost. And so that's my intent. If you're in the church and happy, then I want you to stay in it and remain happy. If you're out of it and struggling, I understand. I really do. And I want you to know that there's hope for you. So I don't have an agenda. I don't. But this story needs to be told for whatever reason. So, and I don't know why. I don't know why I'm doing this. I didn't get a why. All I got was write the damn thing. So yeah, I don't know the why. Even as I sit here right now, I'm like, oh my gosh, is this a good idea? But I go back to what I know, and it's that sharing your truth is always a good idea. You can't go wrong. So I've been getting my thoughts in order on this topic, and I think it's just, this also has to be said. So normally my podcast is a place for me to shoot off the cuff. I continuously shoot myself in the foot when I pre-plan out conversations. And when I try to go at interviews like an actual journalist or like a real podcaster, it never works for me. Like, I think the conversations, they lose their magic, for me at least, when I overly plan or whatever. So I stopped kind of going at it like that. And I allow myself just to be me, like have a real conversation with no outline. I don't know what I'm going to ask a person before we're recording. So that's how most of all my episodes have been, just shooting the breeze, allowing whatever comes up to naturally come up. My solos, though, they are different. So I sit on them for a minute. They're like intentional, and there's order to them, at least in my mind while I'm getting my thoughts together. But when I start recording, the order leaves, and I have what I like to call podcast blackouts. Like, I can't even remember recording. I don't know if anything I say makes sense. And since I'm so close to the work, it's like I can't see it. Does that make sense to any like other creatives? Like I'm too involved with it to actually know how it comes off to others. So I'm just crossing my fingers here and hoping for the best. And I have an ulterior motive too, because truthfully, it's a selfish one. Because I know the second I do this, when I finally release this out into the world, I know my showers and my alone driving time and those moments between being awake and asleep before bed, they will return back to me. They will be mine again. Like, no longer will I be held captive by this story bubbling up inside of me that for whatever reason I meant to share. And maybe that's just like exactly what this is. This is just another story. It's a big part of my story. Like, I don't feel like I'm right and other people are wrong. I actually don't think there's any one significant truth or untruth. There's just my truth and your truth. So this is a story of my truth. And to start, I know we got to go back to the beginning. Actually, I think it may be more importantly, I think I should tell you where I'm at now. Because it's honestly the most authentic type of spirituality I've ever known, and it's taken me a minute to get here. So to start, I should tell you that I separate all my spirituality into mind, body, and soul. Because I deeply understand that mind, body, and soul work synergistically together. Like, okay, example. When I work out regularly, that helps more than just my physique. That's actually not even why I work out. Working out helps my mind, and it helps my hormones and my digestive system. And when all those are good, then I feel more closely connected to myself. And when I feel connected to myself. I feel connected to my soul. And when I feel in alignment with my soul, my conversations with God get really interesting and more inspiration comes, more joy comes. So yeah, I cut up my spirituality into three categories. For my body, I utilize tools like Reiki and foot zoning, and I burn sage and Palo Santo to physically move stagnant energy in my space. And I use essential oils, and I do breath work and cold plunges and ice baths. And I've utilized NET therapy, and I love physical movement like working out and plant medicine, you guys. That was body work for me, plant medicine. For my mind, I also utilize tools, but these tools are like journaling and meditation and positive affirmations. And I do a lot of inner child work. I read so much. I educate myself continuously. Like, I am forever practicing forgiveness and mindfulness. Prayer is amazing for my mind. Human design has been amazing for my mind. To really wrap, like, to learn about how I was specifically designed to use my energy while I'm here on earth. And again, plant medicine was the one most impactful practice, hands down, I've ever used for my mind. Other people choose to go to therapy. And for me, plant medicine was truly 20 years of therapy, in like intense therapy and healing, mashed up into like a week. So like, I really respect that tool. It worked. For my spirit, I worship God and God only. Like, I don't worship the tools I utilize for my mind and my body. So let's just get that straight. But I do read the Bible daily. I pray, I meditate. And okay, this is interesting because I repent of things not serving me. And I don't mean sin. I mean, yeah, you can repent of sins all the time. Everyone sins. But I think people get confused by repentance. Like, because you can repent of, let's just say, you can repent of your jealousy. You can repent of anxiety or your need to please. Like, if you're really, really ready to let that shit go, then give it up to God. Use the atonement. It is free. Like, and everyone, all these spiritual circles are always talking about like releasing, you have to let go. And so the atonement to me is that everyone's saying the same thing. They use different verbs, but the best form of spiritual releasing and letting go, use the atonement. It's easy. Like, so I also have a daily gratitude practice for my spirit to really thrive. And I have learned to honor my body and honor my mind. Like, I recognize that I'm not my thoughts. I'm not my feelings. I'm not even my intuition or my emotions, but I honor those things because they're signals to me, like little gifts and like little course corrections offered up to me as life goes down this crazy and winding road. Like, my emotions and my feelings are my check engine light. They're a signal to me to look inward and figure out what is going on. So another way I'm honoring my spirit or my soul is I'm becoming a teacher to my kids. I do Sunday service, which is my own little Sunday school I made up, and teaching. I teach them about God and Christ's gospel in the Bible specifically, and about life and emotions and relationships and shame and love and service and everything, just everything. And this maybe fills me up and serves me more than it does for them, but regardless, it just feels so right. So if you haven't gathered already from all of that, I'm Christian. When I left the Mormon church all those years ago, though, like, anything Christ-related was just too close to Mormonism for me at that point. Like, it was triggering. And it was like I didn't know Christ without religion just tightly binding him to it. So I, for the sake of my sanity, I had to step away for a minute. And I'll be the first to admit it was confusing. Like, I didn't know what I believed in concrete anymore. But during the months to probably a year that I stepped away from Christianity, it made room for so many other discoveries that I still utilize as tools today. Like, it made room for me to discover even more about meditation and healing old past traumas. And I was discovering and fine-tuning my own spiritual gifts. And I started to talk to God like I never had before. Like, it became deeply personal. And I started examining all the beliefs I had about like myself, marriage, motherhood, relationships, family. Like, I've said it in my trailer episode before, but I literally Marie Kondo'd my own belief system. And I took all the fear out. I took everything out, though. Like, everything I've ever thought of or believed in my life about myself, And then I only put the ones back in that brought me joy. Like I only kept the true ones, and not true to others, but true and personal to me. And this is when I started to realize how much of my life wasn't even mine. So much of my mental space and my heart space was dedicated to doing things out of fear or like superstition. Like so much of me stayed voiceless because I was afraid of making waves and not being good. And I didn't know another way of life because Mormonism, it didn't feel like a choice for me. I was born into it, and that meant that I would remain in it for life and eternity. Like, and I was taught that I was born into it because I was special in heaven. Like my soul was more righteous than other souls who weren't Mormon. That's what we were taught. Like we must have been amazing souls in the pre-existence to be born into loving Mormon families. And I also just was so afraid of people's opinions. And like that was the ringer for me. Like I was scared to be separated from my family in heaven. And before, I think we got to go a little deeper. So because I look back on my Mormon upbringing with immense gratitude, I do. And I'm not just saying that. Like I look back now and I am grateful. And it wasn't always like this. I got upset when I left. It was actually a lot like grieving. There were seven stages. Like I mourned it. A part of grieving is anger. So there was a stage where I was pissed off, like incredibly angry. So I've come a really long way. But really, there's so much about Mormonism that is right. And I want to acknowledge that. Like the main thing that comes to mind is how it brings community back, like in the olden days, like in tribal times even. Like the ward is like a tribe. There are leaders, there are callings, there are systems. They make your community have balance and people feel valued and cared for at every age and loved. Like the women gather with women and the men gather with the men and the children gather with children and then everyone gathers together. Like they celebrate together. They do life together. Like when someone moves, the ward is there. When someone is born, the ward is there. When someone dies, the ward is there. They have big get-togethers and bonding activities almost monthly. And like church doesn't just happen in the building because it spills out into the homes of its members. And there's groups for like elderly people and the ward family goes out of their way to visit the old and honor them and make them not feel lonely. And I feel like this is what's missing in today's society. So being Mormon is a lot like having like a loving network built into wherever you go. And their history, if you're unfamiliar with Mormon history, then it's fascinating. It is a fascinating part of American history if you decide to take a look. Like, because I didn't give it credit when I was a kid, but now as an adult, it amazes me what these people did back in like the 1800s. So long, long, long story short. The first prophet of the church, Joseph Smith, I'm not even going to go into it. He was like 14 when he had a vision with God and Christ. So he and his earliest followers, they were banished from all their communities. People hated Mormons. They were persecuted for their beliefs, like bad. So they trekked out west together, only pulling hand carts. Like women who were pregnant with multiple other children walked in the snow for months. They trekked across the country on foot. And it was winter. They didn't stop until they reached Salt Lake City, Utah, and they settled here. So I remember hearing stories of women like leaving their dead children who didn't make it because so many people died and they would just bury them along the trail, the pioneers. And they did this because of their devout faith, like a faith. They had faith in something bigger and more important than them. And that's a lineage I'm proud of. Even though I made a choice to leave it and start something new that is in more alignment with me, even if I like disagree with its views and ways, I'm proud. They're my roots. I don't deny it, and I won't ever deny that. Because I see the way that Mormonism brings so much value into so many people's lives today. And if you really think about it, what these people are doing is just choosing to live a really morally clean, safe life. Like Mormon people, for the most part, are just kind and compassionate people to their core. They are service-oriented people to their core. So if I feel this way about Mormonism, why did I leave? That is the question. And the answer isn't so simple because while everything I just said is true, I also never felt like I belonged there. And it didn't make sense even to myself because as a kid, I wasn't doing anything rebellious to warrant my feelings of unbelonging. I was actually an extremely spiritual little kid, and I gave all the credit of all my spirituality to the fact that I was Mormon. I was taught that I was that only because I was Mormon that I had this strong connection to spirit. And as a teenager, it was understandable, like the strict guidelines and rules of that faith felt like a total drag, because mostly that's how all strict rules and regulations feel to a teenager. And even as a kid, like, this is true. So even as a kid, I did not agree with ideas that I was being taught in Sunday school. They would put like a woman's worth being put on her body and the way she dresses it, or who or what has been inside of it. And I didn't like or think that it made sense that God only accepted you into heaven if you were married in like the Mormon temple. And I did not agree with the fact that it was my responsibility for me or my body when it caused an impure thought in the minds of the boys around me. Like, there was just so much over-sexualization taught to me at such an early age. It is mind-boggling to me now. So much for the boys. Like, the over-sexualization of shoulders, leading, like, our youth walking around thinking shoulders are sinful. It's just a shoulder. Or shorts above the knee. But it was always about women's bodies, never men's. And with modesty, it's funny because I get what they were trying to teach, but it's like telling a group of kids to not think about a big pink elephant, like repeatedly, like it's brought up all the damn time. Don't think of a big pink elephant. Don't think of a big pink elephant. So what's the first thing that pops into your mind? You're thinking of a big pink elephant all the time. You see it clearly. So I think that this, in the church's take on this one particular teaching, it has created a backfire effect in the culture for today. I see it plain as day. It has created a body and a sex-obsessed culture that breeds off its own shame cycle. So I didn't agree with it even back then. But that never mattered to me that I didn't agree with it, because it was the only way for me to live. There was no going around this. Because the keystone of the entire Mormon church's teachings revolves around two key teachings. And they are that Mormonism is the one true plan for happiness. You do not, or you never will know real joy unless you're Mormon. And the second is the fact that you get to be together with your family forever in heaven. And they call the highest degree of heaven the celestial kingdom. So there's actually three different degrees of heaven in Mormonism. And when you die, you either get to the celestial kingdom or the two lower ones. And like, you don't want the lower ones. And if you're in the lower ones, you can't go up. And it's just a thing. It's a whole thing. There are beautiful parts of the teaching if you really think about it, like a plan for true happiness and the belief that you can be with your loved ones in heaven for eternity. Like, those are actually, that's a beautiful teaching, right? Like, and being with your loved ones in the afterlife is something that I actually believe in to this day. Like, I believe that when I die, my soul won't. I think that there's more after this life, and I know that I'll be with my loved ones. And even as a non-Mormon person, I believe this. But the flip side of that beautiful teaching that I deeply was aware of and understood while growing up Mormon was that the only way you know true happiness and to get to be with your family in the afterlife is if, and dependent, it's like riding on the fact that you are sealed to a spouse in a Mormon temple. This is your ticket into heaven. You cannot get in without it. Like, a Mormon temple marriage is the only way into the celestial degree of heaven, and it's called the sealing. Like, the marriage is called the sealing. So it's like you're sealed together for time and all eternity. And to get to be able to even get to the point where you can get sealed in an LDS temple, there are a lot of hoops you got to jump through. So you have to be 100% like a worthy tithe payer, meaning that 10% of your family's income goes to the church forever and always, every single month. They go off your annual tax statement. So there's checks and balances with this. And you actually meet with your bishop once a year and bring in this information. So they know if it's not the full 10% tithe. Like, and if it's not, then you're not worthy of entering the temple. You also have to be active in the church, meaning you can't miss more than 2 Sundays a month. If you do, you're considered inactive. You have to hold the commandments. And you have to hold the word of wisdom, which is like an extension of the commandments in Christianity. So in Mormonism, they have the word of wisdom, which is no coffee, no tea, no alcohol, no smoking, no drugs at all. Rated R movies are frowned upon. Then there's the law of chastity. So it's referring to sexual sin. And sexual sin is a really, really, really big deal in Mormonism. It is next to murder in the order of things. It's like kill somebody, have sex before you're married. Like that's the order of things. So no sex or any sex like acts before marriage, not even a playful little booby grab. No masturbation ever. No porn, no exceptions. There's also a lot to do with modesty in the religion. So for men and women alike, you wear these holy undergarments, which are like long underwear that look like white biker shorts and kind of like a cap sleeve shirt at all hours of the day, minus when you're working out or showering. So that's a requirement. And most faithful LDS members are also asked to hold callings for their ward. So a calling is like an unpaid role, like a teacher, a librarian. You can get called to be a secretary, or there's like childcare work too, like preschool, or, you know, there's so many, like the bishop, it's like a full-time job and it's completely unpaid. There's a lot. So to get to the point that you can even get into the temple or a temple recommend, it's not simple, as I'm sure you're all gathering. So it's a beautiful teaching and the cornerstone of the Mormon faith, but it takes a lot to get there. And then a lifetime of maintaining those rules. And because your temple recommend can be taken away from you at any point if any one of those areas are faltering. Like say you're not a 100% tithe payer, or you're not considered active in the church anymore because you like vacation, I don't know, or you're breaking a sexual like commandment, then it can be taken away. And if it's taken away, then that directly affects your standing in the church, which ultimately affects your place in heaven with your family. And the leaders always know what's up because you have interviews all the time. Like as a child to when you're 90 years old, the interviews never stop. And if you admit to not adhering to something like one of the rules, then disciplinary action is called. So there's actual court, church court, like real court, where leaders get together. It's like the judge and jury, and they sit you down and decide if your sins warrant like just a repentance process or maybe disciplinary action where you go through like you can get disfellowshipped or even excommunicated. They can kick you out. So this idea of being with your family or not being with your family, or being happy or not being happy, if you don't do all these things, is just there. It's like deeply ingrained into you as early as the age of two. That's when you start learning these ideas, these teachings. And to be honest, it scared the living crap out of me because my dad was always on the fringe, like the outskirts of the church. And I loved this about him. Like I liked how he was, but I was always so scared of that my family wouldn't be together in heaven as a kid. Like, cause I remember I saw him drinking a beer once in secret, my brother and I actually, I don't know if Rory remembers it, but I remember it. I was like seven and I had the craziest anxiety of my life. Like I saw him take a drink of a beer and I was like, oh my gosh, like if he gets in a car crash and dies, he won't be in the celestial kingdom cause he just drank a beer. And, or if I accidentally die, where will I go? Because now the ceiling is null and void. And like, what's going to happen to my mom? Because he just broke the rules, but she's being good. And what's going to happen? And I had this mental madness loop. Just that was my reality as a kid. I always freaked out about my place and my worth in heaven. Even when I was a child doing nothing wrong, I wasn't even sinning, doing nothing wrong. I still felt like it was something bad was going to happen and I wasn't worthy. And it's just a lot of pressure on kids and on parents to maintain these standards 24/7. And it's all because there's just so much love, right? And if you loved God, then this type of obedience is easy. But if you break any of these rules or guidelines, then you just probably don't love God that much. But I loved God. I just thought it was weird that I had to jump through all these hoops to prove it. Because when I was alone, I knew God's love for me was infinite. But the church was teaching me that it was conditional, that blessings were conditional. If I was good, I would get more. I would get more money, more blessings, more opportunities. It was definitely, they were teaching the prosperity gospel for sure. But if I was bad, God would take away things like my health or my money or blessings or opportunities. And it just never clicked for me. I never fully subscribed to that Mormon notion. But like even now, like if you leave the church, all the members say the same four things about people who leave. They say that you wanted to sin, so you left. They say that someone offended you at church, so you left. Or they say that you just didn't ever have a strong testimony, so you left. Or my favorite was that you're lazy. That's why you left. Like, you did not pray enough. You did not read enough. You didn't repent enough. Like, you just weren't good. And you're lazy. And I can tell you that none of those reasons is the reason I chose to leave. Because, and I'll get into this in a minute, but because I think we got to tie up the whole family in heaven cornerstone teaching. It's a big one. Okay. Hold up, guys. We get to talk about Vuori. So Vuori is my favorite workout line ever, ever. I've done them all. I can say this with just 100% confidence. Like, Vuori is the best workout line I have ever put on my body, bar none. So why do I like Vuori the most? It comes down to two things. It comes down to the fact that the workout clothing is extremely versatile and comfortable. Like it's doing so much. I can work out in it. I can lounge in it. I can go out to dinner in it. But I also like look really good in it. It's supportive without being constrictive. And I have yet to find any other workout line that mimics what Vuori does. And they're wizards. I don't know how they did it. I really don't. But the one thing that I really want to talk about is the fact that they are doing men's workout clothing right. There isn't a company like Vuori that is doing men's as good as they are. So the men's mimics the women's. It's versatile, it's comfortable, it's fashionable, yet supportive. Like they got it all right. They just did it. So if you have a man in your life who's wearing those old gym shorts, you know the ones, guys, the floppy, it's everything's floppy. I don't have to go into detail. This is not the case with Vuori. You got to get your man some Vuori shorts. So just for the Wake Up with Wesley audience, Vuori is offering you guys 20% off of your first purchase. 20%. This is huge. So get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on this planet at VuoriClothing.com/Wesley. So that's V-U-O-R-I clothing.com/Wesley. Not only will you receive 20% off of your first purchase, but you can enjoy free shipping on any U.S. order over $75 with free returns, you guys. So go to VuoriClothing.com/Wesley and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. Now let's get back to the show. So yeah, the family is the main focus of the church. And it's the main principle teaching that kept me in the faith for so long because I absolutely loved my family. Like I wanted to be with them in the afterlife. And when I had kids, oof, honey, I doubled down on that belief. Because I love my so I would jump in front of a train for my kids. I would do anything. I would go as far as abandoning myself for these beliefs just so I could be with my kids because the beliefs were like insurance. Like even if life sucked and I didn't feel like I belonged even to myself or was allowed to get to even fully know myself in my mind, well, then at least I'd have eternity in heaven with my kids and my family. So I would abandon my intuition and all the differing thoughts I had because nothing was more important to me than being with my kids for eternity. And that's why I stayed for as long as I did. I was scared to lose my family in the afterlife, and I was scared that I would be punished and depressed if I left. I was scared to lose blessings and opportunities too. And also, I was just scared I wouldn't feel the Holy Spirit anymore because I've always had such a strong connection forever and always to it. And I thought it was because I was Mormon, because we were taught that the Holy Spirit, Mormons call it the Holy Ghost, can only communicate with you if you're obedient to the Mormon rules. Like you lose this gift of the Holy Ghost when you break the rules. Like God cuts off communication when you sin, or especially when you leave the church, like you don't, you're cut off. So like I said, I turned off my own thoughts and feelings and I had so many questions, but I just shelved the items that didn't make sense to me. I didn't want to criticize the church or its leaders or its teachings because it was wrong to do that. Like the leaders themselves, they tell you it's wrong to question them. It's like questioning God. So instead of criticizing the church or its teachings, I learned to criticize myself. And for real, I see so many Mormon people doing this. This could lead me into a whole nother tangent, but if you look at statistics per capita in Utah, so Utah County specifically is the Mormon capital of the world. So per capita, it is ranked number 4 for prescription med use for opiates, for depression and anxiety meds. And I think Adderall is on that list too. And out of the whole United States, it has the second highest rate of plastic surgery in the nation, only compared to Miami. And like just today, someone posted a picture on Instagram of a billboard in Lehi, Utah, right down the road. And it's like the busiest part of the freeway. And the billboard says, "God is remodeling his home. Maybe it's time to remodel yours." And it's a picture of the Salt Lake City Temple, which they are remodeling. And then a huge freaking mirror. So all the Mormons driving by will look at themselves and think that they need to give themselves a little remodel because it was put on by a plastic surgeon. The board is like, it's for plastic surgery. It's just the weirdest shit. Like, you guys, weirdest shit. Oh, it's so weird. But like, oh, it also has the highest amount of adolescent and adult people alike, like people who are seeking treatment for severe eating disorders. That's also the highest in the nation is in Utah. And also Utah, oh, this one was crazy. Utah County has the highest number ranking out of the whole United States for usage of porn sites. I was like, what? This is crazy. Oh, the grossest one was the highest ranking for child molestation. And I think it was ranked 8th in the country for child abuse. And people think that this is because the high amount of kids here, but you guys, it's per capita. So it has nothing to do with how many kids are here. It's like averaged. So there's a problem. There's a problem here. And maybe it's a conversation for an entirely different time, or maybe not, because I don't have the energy or the desire to go there. It's the facts though. And I think it's time that people start looking at the cold hard numbers. Like, numbers don't lie. There is something about the society, like this cultural perfectionism that Mormonism has created that is entirely unhealthy for an obviously large part of the population here in Utah. But you will never hear it being correlated back to the church. I promise you that. Like, the connection won't ever be made by a member or a leader. Not ever. Never. But this is the box of perfectionism that I was raised in. And it did cause a lot of self-criticism for me starting at a really young age. And the criticism always turns into shame. And it was because I realized I could never keep up. Like, it, and I was just too circular, right? Like, I'm too wavy for this very square type of peg that Mormonism demands of its members. And I felt ashamed about my mind, about the way it thought out of the box. And I felt shame about my curiosity and the questions I had that would always run rampant in my head constantly. And I felt shame about the deep desire I had to live life not in the box I was born into. Like, I would hear stories of people getting baptized when they're 90, and I'm like, oh, I'm so jealous. Like, they got to live a life and then be Mormon and then get accepted into heaven. Like, I was a child thinking like, oh, they're so lucky. What? This is so crazy. So yeah, I felt shame when I thought of my future self, and I knew exactly how my life would unfold. Like, I would grow up, marry a returned missionary in the temple. I'd pop out kids, raise those kids Mormon, do Mormon temple work. I would attend church meetings until I die. And then when I died, heaven is filled with more church. Heaven for Mormons is just more temple work. It's getting souls to be baptized and sealed in, even in the afterlife. So I would cringe thinking of my future. It didn't light me up. And it was the cringing part that made me feel shame about myself, because I would look around me and I see that this same thought in the eyes of my peers and family and church people, this would give them peace and happiness. They loved knowing what the rest of their life would look like, and they loved knowing exactly what heaven is like. But the thought in me felt like a cage, like a prison. And it was so confusing for me. Like, why does this strict structure that seems to cage me in, it gives other people so much freedom? It's like a lot of Mormons thrive and they do really well off this formula that Mormonism lays out for them. Because it's it's like living life with guardrails on. Like, you don't do anything that could potentially make waves. Like, you don't drink, you don't do drugs, you don't even drink coffee or tea. You don't watch rated R shows. Like, you don't have sex with anyone before your wedding night. Like, this is, it's kind of healthy, right? Like you live a life full of service and community and love. So what's so wrong with that? Like, why can I not get on board? Why does everything about that make me feel depressed, even when I wasn't doing anything wrong? Like, what does that mean about me? What is wrong with me? Like, I must be so messed up. I must be evil. Satan definitely has his claws in me. That was my thought. And I hated that when the church leaders would tell us that there were members, that we all were members of the one and only true church of the earth, and that happiness only laid within the doors of the temple, and that God would only allow me into heaven as long as I was married to a Mormon man. Like, when I would hear that time after time, Sunday after Sunday, you're in church like 10 weeks because you go like 3 hours on a Sunday, 2 hours on a Wednesday. If you're a teenager, you go every hour in the morning. Like, it's a lot of hours in church, you guys. But when I would hear this, my instincts were like, meh, I don't know. Like, really? There's only one way to live? For 7 billion of us, there's only one way to make us all happy. I just didn't buy it. And here's the truth. This is the truth. I didn't hate the church. I hated me inside of that church because I hated that I could not just go along with it. I hated that I didn't fit the mold. No matter how hard I tried to turn off my mind. I tried not to listen to my soul. It didn't matter. Like, in the Mormon faith, they have this saying to doubt your doubt before you doubt your faith. So I never doubted my faith. I just consistently and constantly doubted myself. Like, if I was only more righteous, if I wasn't so worldly, if I wasn't so curious, like, that list went on in my head. It never mattered to me, though, because there was one thing worse than not being Mormon, and that was being an apostate. So what is an apostate? I guess I'm an apostate. But an apostate, according to Mormons, is someone who once knew the truth of God fully. You were a member of his church, the Mormon church, which is God's favorite church with all of God's favorite people in it. And then you decided to leave after knowing all of this. You know the secrets of the world. So to be an apostate holds a heavy price on your soul. Like, hell isn't talked about a lot in Mormonism. It's actually called outer darkness when they do talk about it. But when apostasy gets brought up, the concept of hell or outer darkness always follows. And now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know if it's Mormon folklore or actual doctrine. But all I do know is that is what I was taught and believed. Like, if you're Mormon, but you leave the church at some point in your life, then you're an apostate, and there is a special form of torturous hell for you in outer darkness, and you will be alone and your family will suffer. So on one hand, we learn everyone has free agency, right? And we all have choice. And everyone can do whatever they want while here on earth. But like, you can be Mormon, don't be Mormon. Like, we're accepting of all people. We just want to help. We want to be of service. But if you are an apostate, oof, honey, there's another story for you, a whole nother vibe. Mormons love everybody, but they do not love apostates. So this is why I didn't feel like I had a choice but to stay in it. Because I was born in it. I didn't choose it. But if I decided to not be a member any longer, then I was promised to lose blessings, lose my intuition, my connection with God, my communication with the Holy Spirit, which I always felt was so strong. And then when I died, my soul would be alone in outer darkness, and everyone would hurt because of my choices. And I actually have a recent story to back up this way of thinking that I used to subscribe to. So the church, it just had general conference just a few weeks ago, and a friend of mine sent me a talk from it. And so, yeah, this is recent. This is like their latest thing. And also, general conference it's the big guns, guys. It only happens twice a year, and it's the people who speak in it are the highest ranking officials. It's all the major authorities and the prophet who speak at general conference. And they work on these talks for months. And this woman's particular talk that I'm referencing to, it's a good example of how we were trained to think as Mormon people. So this tale, it was a precautionary tale about a real life Mormon woman who raised 10 kids. 10 kids, guys. She packed them up into her station wagon and took them to church every Sunday of their lives. The woman giving the talk, she says she was a good mother. She was such a loving mother. She did all the right things, except she had a nasty habit of drinking coffee, and she kept a pot always on the back of her stove every day. And only when she was finally like 90 years old did she kick her filthy, nasty habit of consuming coffee, and she got right with God, and she was finally able to get back inside the doors of the temple at the very end of her life, though. And she died shortly after she entered the temple into the celestial kingdom, because she made it right and tight with God. But because of her earthly wickedness, only one out of all of her 10 children made it to inside the doors of the temple. Only one. And the woman who was giving this talk, she's like an authority. I don't know who she is. She's like crying while she's talking. And she's like, oh, like she's just so sad about this. And she is lifting this old deceased woman up. Remember that she's like freaking, this is real. She's reminding us that she's a good woman. She's a loving mother. She raised 10 kids from like, and they're all Mormon, for goodness sake. And that's no easy feat. But in the same breath, she is kicking this woman back down. They blame her. They're blaming her for her 9 other kids not being worthy of the temple. Like it's her freaking fault. All because she was a bad example. Like her kids must have seen her break the word of wisdom every day of their lives while growing up. And this is surely why they aren't in good standing or sealed in the temple. But she says it without saying it. You know what I mean? Like she's implying this. Because also we don't actually know why the 9 other kids didn't make it to the temple. But the speaker draws the conclusion for us all. I don't know how many million people watch General Conference 2 times a year. But she draws the conclusion that this is the mother's fault. It's all because of her. And it's this type of manipulation and jumping to conclusions. And it's the gaslighting for me and the superstition for me that I was raised in. Like the judgment and blame that they put on this woman while simultaneously lifting her up and glorifying her. It's weird. It's just plain weird. But what's even more odd to me is that I completely understood that. It felt familiar watching that back because they do that a lot. Like the 22-year-old me would have liked that talk, like the cautionary tale. But the now me, when I watched it, I was on my phone. I want to throw my freaking phone because it's just unfair. It's unfair the way that they were talking about that woman. Remember, she's a real lady, like an actual person. She's dead now. She's grandchildren. I bet they listen to it. So she can't speak for herself. She can't speak on what actually happened. But they put it on her regardless. The souls of her children, they used her as an example. Like, but we're individuals here, right? Like we all make our own choices. But to put the price of your kids' souls not being temple worthy and not being able to get into the highest degree of heaven, because let's face it, the woman did have a lot of damn kids. She probably needed to pick me up in the morning just to raise them. It's just wrong to me that they put this on her. And for the first time publicly, I'll call it what it is. It's fear-mongering. They use fear as a master teacher because fear works. You scare people bad enough, watch how quickly they fall into line. Watch how quickly they start obeying. Just watch. But what's worse is they do use fear, but then they double down and they use weapons. They have arsenal that they use to really drive in a topic, and the weapons they use is your kids. Their lives, their happiness, and their souls. They weaponize your kids and they weaponize your family. They use the things that matter the most to you, and it is wrong. It's plain wrong. It does harm. It does more harm than drinking a cup of coffee will ever do to an individual in their life, in my opinion. So yeah, I didn't have a choice to leave it, even though they tell you you have a choice. It doesn't feel like you do. That is something I know for sure, that the freedom and the agency that they preach we all have doesn't feel like freedom at all. And on the idea of freedom, I was just recently listening to a podcast with Graham Hancock in it. He said something so interesting. It made me stop and write it down. He said, oh gosh, I need to drink a drink. This is long, you guys. I thought that I had nothing to say about this, and obviously I have a lot to say. Okay. So on the idea of freedom, he says, Graham Hancock says, if grown adults are not free to make sovereign decisions about their own health or their own bodies and their own consciousness while doing absolutely no harm to others, then freedom is a meaningless word. I'm going to say that again. If grown adults are not free to make sovereign decisions about their own health or their own bodies or their own consciousness while doing absolutely no harm to others, then freedom is a meaningless word. And it's my opinion that in this religion, you don't have that freedom. Because say you have a back injury and you've been prescribed opiates and you're on them for forever. If you want to get off opiates and use a more natural type of pain management, like THC, if that's the case, then before you make this choice for your health to stay in good standing with the church, then you would have to go to your bishop first. And only the bishop will tell you if he thinks God says it's okay for you specifically. Because the bishop, he's the guy in charge of the church, the bishop has discernment, which means he knows more about you than you. Like the bishop is the authority and the middleman between you and God. So he's actually in charge. He's always in charge. He's your proverbial dad, even when you're well into your 70s or 80s. Like you have to check things off with the bishop when it comes to your own body and health. Or say you want to go into the temple, but you drink coffee like that little old lady did. So the acceptable thing to do in this culture would be to replace your morning cup of coffee with soda. So you swap out something that is natural, made from the earth. For me, I choose like organic. It's toxin-free, mold-free, pesticide-free. That's the coffee I drink, and I don't even use cream or sugar in it. I drink it black. But it's natural. It's a bean made by the earth. Well, in this culture, you swap that out with some diet DP. You drink some Coca-Cola. You get some Red Bull. Whatever mixture of caffeinated infused chemical soup you choose, it's totally up to you because that's more appropriate to God. Like God definitely wants you to drink that instead. And God lets you in his house, in his temple with that caffeinated chemical cocktail more easily than if you're drinking hot organic bean water. You're not allowed in if you're drinking the bean water. So it just makes absolutely no damn sense. It is senseless, actually. But for my entire life, I bit my tongue and I agreed with it because I was so scared of the repercussions of being an apostate. But things started to change. As our kids aged and the church discussions were getting heavier for them in their church classes, I became more uncomfortable with the realities like that. Like it just, the hypocrisy of it all is just, I couldn't take it. I couldn't justify it any longer. And when Zuri turned 8, the wheels came off, my friends. So this is the beginning of the undoing. So at this point, I finally got the courage to start asking the big questions to mostly, I started with other Mormon women who I trusted and loved, I felt close to, because my capacity to just keep going along with everything was waning. And I never talked to these women in a church setting, but it was always in a real life setting, like in their homes or my home. And the conversations I had with them, I'm not kidding you, were hushed whispers. We were alone. We were alone, but whispering our conversations. Like I dared speak above a hush, but I would ask all the questions that weren't sitting right with me. And they were questions like, why do you think that men can be sealed to multiple women in the temple when we don't practice polygamy like on earth? And I would ask them what they thought about when they would think about their afterlife and having their husbands have multiple wives. And I would ask them what they thought about black people not getting the priesthood or allowed in until like almost 1980. It was like 1978 or something, like crazy late. Like crazy late. I remember asking one of my friends, like, why do you think Emma Smith left? Like, why she left? Like, that's like the founder, Joseph Smith's wife. She left. And I would be like, why do you think she left? She knew everything. Like, she knows the truth of the truth. She was there. She was a witness. And I would ask what they thought about Joseph Smith's 34 wives, ranging from 14 and up, 14 years old. And I would ask what they thought about him marrying his friends' wives while they were away. So there was polygamy and polyandry. And these women, who I love and trust, they're my friends, they're my family, they would confide in me that they didn't understand too. But then they would follow it up with like, don't worry though. Like in heaven, this all makes sense. So that was their advice to me. Like, oh, just shelf it. Put it on, put the things you don't understand now on a shelf. But when you get to heaven, it will make perfect sense. You're not going to care that your husband has a million other wives. You're going to love them. They're going to be your sisters. Like, so just ignore these things while you're alive. Pretend it's not even here. It gets ironed out in heaven. And I would walk away and be like, what the fuck? Like, we're all really just going around ignoring this stuff. I guess we are. Like, I guess we all have been. So I was like, okay, shelf it. Another item on the shelf. Ooh, it's getting heavy. But red flags started popping up. So this is what people always ask me. Like, how did the process of waking up and out of this really start for me? And I'll tell you that it wasn't one thing. It was more like a series of events that happened next. But back then, I didn't know what was going on. It was kind of like, you know how you can just see clearly, like hindsight is 20/20. It's like when you're dating someone new, but you see red flags. They're popping up left and right. But he's just so cool and it's comfortable. And you introduced your families and your families are involved and your friends are involved. And it's just you just ignore them. You ignore the red flags. So a series of back-to-back red flags started to happen, and it forced me to reevaluate my relationship I had with the religion I was raised in. And knowing what I know now, I believe it was God. It was God there poking and prodding me to follow my truth, but I was trained, more like programmed, to resist my divine intuition. My divine intuition I was feeling, they told me was Satan. If I had a differing thought from whatever the church was teaching, they told me it was Satan. So literally, since I was 2 years old, I was indoctrinated to always trust the church and only question myself. So the first thing that happened was Zuri turned 8. And when you turn 8 in the church, it's significant because it's the age that you choose to be baptized into it and officially become a member of it yourself. So at this point, Bronson and I still hadn't gotten sealed in the temple, which is unusual, to be honest. We both just couldn't pull that trigger because it never felt right. We waited 8 years because I kept waiting for it to feel right. Even though, like, it was always on the books, we never did it. But something about Zuri turning 8 really lit the fire under both of us. Like, it was right at the time we had hit rock bottom. And he was totally out of his. I was still kind of in mine. But Bronson really was doing better than ever. And honestly, the thought of getting sealed gave me a lot of hope. Like, I thought it would fix everything for good. So I started meeting with the bishop, honestly, for like the millionth time, because we had done this process before. But I started meeting with him weekly in preparation to get sealed as a family and get Zuri baptized. So I started doing all the things I was told to do. I started reading the Book of Mormon daily again, being more active in the church, paying all the 10% tithe. I accepted ward callings. I withheld from drinking my beloved coffee. Of course, no alcohol, no drugs. All of it. And I met with him weekly. But this time I was doing it way deeper than I ever had before. Like, I was studying. I was going into deep church doctrine. I was studying it. I was really trying to understand and sink my teeth into this organization that so in hopes that I could alleviate the uneasy feelings I had about it and finally just pull the trigger to get sealed. Like, looking back, I thought that I could educate myself into understanding the things that I just couldn't accept in my heart. So I was diving deep into church-approved websites and talks and church, all the church resources, and like looking at like their old sermons and stuff. Like, it was wild. So I had meetings with the bishop, and in our weekly chats, I started to become more bold in my questions. Because the more I was learning, the more I was like, what the actual, like, it was doing the opposite effect. And this is all church-approved stuff, right? Like, I wasn't going outside of the church to learn it. I was just going inside the church to learn the stuff. But I wanted to know specifics about the covenants you make for time and all eternity when you get sealed in the temple. And the bishop told me that it's sacred information, which honestly just means secret. And it can only be revealed to you in the temple as you're doing the act of getting sealing, like getting sealed. And I remember my response to him was like, well, like, my dad is like a brilliant businessman, which he is. And my dad always did say this to me, but he was like, you never enter into a contract. Do not sign a contract you don't understand. So if we were talking about my soul here and time and all eternity and the future of my life and my prosperity, like, I really think it's just smart and appropriate to know what I'm getting into before I'm actually already doing it. before I actually am in the process of sealing my soul. Like, doesn't that just make sense? You need to know what you're promising. And he was like, I remember him kind of laughing. He was like, oh, nope, you'll know when you're doing it. And I was like, okay, red flag. But like more like a yellow because I knew he wouldn't tell me. I was poking and prodding in some hopes to get some deeper understanding. He just wouldn't budge at all. So it was nothing too alarming, red flag, but like first of many to come. But it set the scene for the next bigger red flag. So the next red flag was that he told me to stop listening to the YouTubes I told him I was listening to. Like one day, just in casual conversation, I told him, oh my gosh, I'm learning all this interesting stuff. Like I'm learning about how powerful our thoughts are. And I was telling him that I was learning about like Dr. Joe Dispenza's meditations. And I was like listening to like coaches give talks, like what are, like when they pump you up, like I would like start my day with that and be like, yeah, I'm going to do the dishes. And I was like laughing at myself with this guy, like doing Dr. Joe Dispenza's meditations and listening to motivational YouTubes and just making conversation. And he got serious and he was like, you need to stop listening to those. And I was like, oh, why are they bad? And he was like, well, you know, they're not church approved. And I remember him being like, at this time in your life, you need to only be taking in church approved literature and entertainment sources. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, cause I wanted to be good. So I stopped listening to inspirational YouTubes and just like, why did I die? I don't know. So third red flag. In another meeting, I was again asking more questions, hoping for more understanding because I was digging so deep into church shit that I was like, "There, I have more questions than ever before." This one was about polygamy and Joseph Smith marrying other men's wives while they were away and very young children. And I just couldn't wrap my head around it. And this was pissing him off. I could see him physically get pissed. And he stopped me mid-sentence and if he ever listens to this, you are a nice guy. You're a lovely man. You're so nice. You're great. You're lovely, really. But he got angry and short with me and he was stern. He turned on dad mode, mean dad mode. And he was like, you know, Wesley, I've seen more families disintegrate over curiosity than anything else. More than addiction, more than porn, more than like over disagreements about money. Like curiosity kills more families than anything else. And I see you. You are curious. You're a curious one. And I will warn you now, the road of curiosity, this road you're going down will not end well for your children. He said, my children. And I was like, oh, like it was like such a stern talking to. I cried. And because the one thing about me that I knew made me was my mind. I know the way I see the world is unique. I know that my view isn't like others. And I know that my curiosity, I hated it. I hated how it made things harder for me. Like how I can't just accept other people's words. Like I have to figure things out for myself. But I also knew, even though I hated it, it's what made me me. And this man who supposedly had discernment over me, like this man who is the middleman between me and God, which means God tells him things about me that God won't tell me about myself because I don't have the authority or the keys of the priesthood. He was telling me that the one thing that made me was bad. And that me being my authentic, curious, asking self would ruin my family and my children. And I remember knowing at this exact moment that all this talk about discernment was bullshit. That was the spirit talking to me. That was God talking to me because I know God. Those were not God's words about me. And I could feel this man's discomfort. All of my questions made him uncomfortable. I was not being quiet. I was talking back. And I knew that in that moment, he used God to silence me because of his own discomfort, because he didn't have answers to the questions I was asking. He was uncomfortable. And this act felt fucking familiar. Like it had been done to me before in this organization. I was sure of it. Only then did I have like the awareness and the maturity and like the life experience to address it and not accept it as truth because it's not. So I decided to take a few weeks off after that, after our little conversation, because I needed space. Fourth red flag. Okay, so a few weeks went by and I wasn't going in for the bishop like meetings. So they came to our house one day, like cold called, like just freaking knocked, and he brought missionaries. It was like they were ganging, like honestly, when you think about it, it's like they're getting an army. Like they were ganging up on me. So they said, oh, we haven't been able to get a hold of you. We need to like do baptism prep for Zuri and more temple prep for us. So we let them in the house. We chatted for a while all together and they were like giving lessons. And at one point in the conversation, the bishop asked to speak to our daughter Zuri alone. And I didn't think twice about it. I was like, oh yeah, whatever. Like, yeah. So what happened next? I was so shocked and I was actually in disbelief because he stood up to take her hand to like walk away, like so they could talk a little bit in private, not even like in a closed room, but just privately. And when he did this, my body jumped up. It threw itself between his hand and her hand. Like I got in between them. And it was so weird because my conditioning said yes. Like I just was like, oh yeah, take her. But my body said no. And I had no say in the matter. Like I remember standing between them. It freaked out everyone in the room. It scared everyone, me the most. And I remember being like, oh shit, like what is going on? I remember like lying, fumbling around with my words. I can't remember what I said, but it was probably like, oh, we got to go. And the bishop, looking back, it's so clear he totally knew what was going on. Like he suspected my internal freak out and he was like, Sister Christensen, are you okay? They call you brother and sister. And I was like, are you okay? And I was like, oh yeah, yeah. We have to go, blah, 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 blah. Don't know what I said. And I remember them leaving. I shut the door. I went into my room and I cried because I had no idea what happened. I felt embarrassed. It was embarrassing. And I felt so much shame and confusion. But the thing I was feeling the most at that point, I was sure that I did not want Zuri to start this process of getting baptized. And it terrified me because I didn't know why. So I spent the next week dodging their calls and trying to decipher like what was going on inside of me. Like what were my instincts telling me? Because my mind and my history, everything about me, it knew that the 8-year-old baptism was coming. I was prepping for it. So what was this resistance? Like why did I throw my body in between them? So I doubled down on like the prayer and the scripture and like meditation and all of it. And they teach you to search, ponder, and pray. That's like a common Mormon theme. So I was searching, pondering, and praying a lot. And in meditation, the answer came to me. And the answer was that I knew now why. And my body acted as if I was quite literally a mama bear protecting her cub, because him taking her to that private interview would be the first initiation into my daughter abandoning herself. Like that was it. That was the truth that my body wouldn't let me ignore. And my mind didn't want to believe this. I wanted to think it was a lie. I was telling myself like, oh, I don't know. It's just weird. But every time I went there, it rung true, which led me down the rabbit hole of realizing that the only way I knew that this information was true was from experiencing it myself. I knew that this was true because it happened to me. I was projecting my experience onto my kids. And there was no more lying to myself about that. And as a mother, sometimes I think it's our kids that get us to look at truth. Because I could never do this type of work for myself. There was too much fear. But when it came to my daughter and all my kids, the truth is blaring out loud always, clearly. My body acted as if she was in danger, and it disregarded social norms, and it disregarded being polite, and it was embarrassing, but it happened. It was true. I had to look at it. And then the final red flag. I swear all these things happened in succession too. It was like one right after the other. It was like boom, 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 boom. It was crazy. But I was nursing Ozzy, I remember, at the time, which meant I would lay down in my bed while he like napped. I would nurse him to sleep. And that's like when I would watch all my shows. I love TV. I love shows. So this particular day I turned on the TV, the History Channel was on, and it was a special on Adolf Hitler and Nazi Germany, like the Nazi army in Germany in like the 1940s. I was kind of paying attention, kind of not, until I remember the narrator started talking about how the majority of the country back then could get behind Hitler and like support his ridiculous motives and ideology. Like, I think we now look, we always compare ourselves to them. Like, would I go along with that shit? Like, I'm like, no, hell no. So the narrator of the show goes into saying that a tactic used to control the civilians of Germany was to eliminate all literature and art and music, news, everything that wasn't Nazi approved. So they had, the entire country was getting only one source of information. It was all Nazi propaganda, and they had no other source of news. And it was like a bell rang. I was like, oh, because my bishop had just told me to stop taking in any and all non-church approved literature or YouTubes or entertainment. And I remember I had a physical reaction, like the hairs on my arms stood up. And when the narrator, he started to say that criticism against the Nazi like regime was forbidden and it was actually like punishable. And while I don't think it's church doctrine, I do know it's wildly unacceptable culturally to criticize the church and its leaders. And like the leaders of the church get revelation from God. So if you go against them, you're going against God. And when he said this, I was like, I already had like the arms or the hairs on my arms standing up, but I got chills. My body was having a full-on visceral reaction to this stuff. And I want to clear something up because before I go further, because I already know it's going to get twisted. I'm not relating the church to Nazis. Not at all. What happened here, though, is that I'm telling you the series of events that got me to think critically against the church for the first time in my adult life. Because there were parallels in the mind control aspects of the Nazis, not in the acts or intention, not what they did, but in the mind control part. Because for the first time, this is when I started realizing that there are some serious mind control tactics going on in this specific organization. Like anything that's not church approved, they call anti-Mormon propaganda. So we're taught over and over and over again not to look into anything. It's said weekly over the pulpit, like you're free and clear to look into anything that's church approved. Like you can go on church approved websites or read their books or their pamphlets. But anything involving church history that isn't church approved is considered anti-Mormon propaganda. Like, so you're only getting one side of the story and it's their side of the story. And that just, I was like, that's weird. Like, why? Like, if it's a true church, what the truth, it's true no matter what. Like, however it came to be, like, why are they not, like, telling us everything? And I started realizing that, like, the hive mind mentality of the church and its leaders and the sheer, just the strength in its numbers actually did have an effect on me growing up, like, throughout my adolescence and well into adulthood. Like, I really started asking myself, why didn't I question the bishop when he told me what I'm allowed and not allowed to read in private? Especially when the stuff I was reading or watching was empowering me. It was incredibly motivating and empowering, and it was helping me. And it wasn't pornographic. It was not evil. It was not in opposition to the church. It wasn't anti-Mormon literature at all. Why did he tell me to stop? Here's the ringer, though. What's crazier to me was, why didn't I question him when he told me to stop reading or watching non-church approved motivational YouTubes? Like, I just easily accepted his command. I obeyed the guy without question, without thought. Why did I think, oh, the kicker. I started to think about, like, I cannot believe that I thought it was normal as a 14-year-old girl to do the interviews that we did. We had to do them. Like, you would go into a closed door room with like a 50-year-old man who you don't know very well. Like, it's random if you do know them very well. And they would ask me how I touch myself. Like, where do I touch myself? Do girls touch me? Do boys touch me? If they do, where and how and when? Why did I think that was ever okay? Like, why did any of us ever think that that is okay? It is so not okay. It is so incredibly inappropriate. Like, but remember what we're taught. Doubt your doubt before you doubt your faith. And Mormonism was all of our faith. So we didn't doubt that the leader's advice to us may not be in our best personal interest. Like, we didn't doubt the uncomfortable bishop interviews you have from 12 to 18. And like married people, they ask married people if they masturbate. That's fucking weird. Like, it's just inappropriate. But I have to give myself grace here. I have to be kind to myself about this. Because when you have an authority figure over you forever and always, like I did, you don't think for yourself. You ask the authority figure, and then they always know what's best for you. But I'm realizing now that that life, like a life that I was living like that, it felt like I was forever 17 or something, like even at 27 years old. Because, okay, let's talk about what it means to be 17. Guys, I need to interrupt this right here to let you all know about the Daily Shifts app. So you've heard me talk about the Daily Shifts before. It's an app that I personally use that totally encompasses all the daily tasks needed to start shifting your life in a more positive direction. So it focuses on mindfulness, meditation, a gratitude practice, goal setting, being present, and breath work. It is so simple and so easy to use, yet incredibly powerful. I can't even tell you. Like, you have to try it out for yourself to really see how these little daily habits and prompts can truly start to change your life for the better. So I also know that most of my listeners here are here for similar reasons. Like, you're either experiencing a spiritual awakening in some way or another yourself. And that's probably been triggered by grief or loss, or maybe even a breakup or a faith transition, like a job change or a lifestyle change. Like, you're just growing and you're looking for guidance on how to move forward in a way that feels good and actually doable. And I am telling you that this is it. So Doug, the founder of The Daily Shifts, is offering you guys, the Wake Up with Wesley listeners, something they have never done before. So they're offering you their masterclass, which is a 75-page workbook that goes incredibly in depth. And along with the workbook, they give you access to the Daily Shifts private Facebook group, which holds weekly challenges, printable calendars, and just the community is where it's at. Like, that is worth it alone, just the community alone. So they're offering all this to you, the workbook, all the access and the app for $139. This would normally be $1,100, you guys. So that's a savings of over $900. So you got to take this offer up. It will not last. And it is only for you guys, the Wake Up with Wesley listeners. So if you're interested, please go to www.thedailyshifts.com/Wesley and just take the leap. So that's www.thedailyshifts.com/Wesley and start to really shift your life. Now we can get back to the show. So 17 is rough because it's hard. It's like you're almost an adult. You're just so close. You're right there. But you still live with your mom and your dad, who tell you what you can and can't do, where you can go, what you're eating, what you can and can't watch, when and how you're cleaning. Like, you know, like, and that's how it is in the church. You're never fully 18. You remain 17 for forever because, and there's like this, the motive part too. Like, okay, let's talk about paying tithing, because I believe in giving of your talents and your resources and your time and knowledge and money to deserving people who may have less than you. I believe in this type of tithing. I actually practice it now. I do it because I want to, because I have been given so much. And now I am finally in a position to where I can start like giving back. But in this religion, there's repercussions if you don't pay your tithing. You lose your temple recommend, which is your ticket into heaven. So this sets up a scenario where people do the things. They pay, and they pay a lot. But it's out of like avoiding repercussions. They'll be like, you can be in trouble if you don't do it. You can be shamed if you don't do it. You can lose callings. Like, if you're not in good standings with the church, like, other people know. And I know a lot of people are fearful of not paying it. They're superstitious. They think that something bad will happen to them, or that God will take away their blessings if they don't pay, or their job. And I'm really not joking here. This is a common belief amongst Mormons. And I do have to say, it's so hard because I see this, but then I see there's probably hundreds of thousands of other Mormon members who pay because they want to. and they do believe it's going to good use. But again, it's done out of a different vibration when it's a requirement rather than a true desire to give of what you can month after month. And this goes on until you die, because there's the authority over you with checks and balances. Like, people literally make sure you're doing the stuff you're supposed to be doing. And when you're not, I've heard of countless stories of people going to their bishops and tattletelling on other members, adults, you guys, like adult people. And I realized maybe for the first time ever that I might actually know what's best for me. Like, this guy, the bishop, the authority that I'm supposed to listen to, he actually doesn't know the first thing about me. And the only thing he's caught on to about me that is somewhat accurate is that I'm curious. And he proceeded to tell me it would destroy my children. And why didn't I question the women whom I love and trusted and adored when they told me they too didn't understand a lot of this stuff, but they go with it anyway? Why didn't I ask them, like, whoa, how does that make you feel? Like, why didn't I ask them, like, how heavy did these shelved items get for you? Like, how long have you been carrying all this around? And what's it like to carry this load for as long as you've been? Because they were older and I was younger, and the shelved items were getting heavy for me. So that day nursing Ozzy on my bed, watching the show about Nazi Germany, was the first time I let myself feel how heavy this had become. My confusion, my frustration, and my inability to have my own thoughts. I realized that day on the bed, I would constantly check my inner dialogue and make sure, like, even the private thoughts I was having were in alignment with the church, and I would punish myself when they weren't. And so I just laid down there that day and I let my mind go wild. Like, what do I think? I let myself go there. Like, I realized in that moment what I already knew deeply, and that was that not a lot of my beliefs or thoughts were in alignment with this specific organization's. And this started the undoing. This is when I also started to connect the dots about my shame and my earlier years struggling with addiction and substance abuse. Because the shame I felt about myself led me to numb when I turned like 18. And the shame I had about deeply understanding that I didn't belong there yet constantly pretended to, it created a pain inside of me that was so big. And suddenly I didn't feel evil or bad for the way I chose to numb out when I was younger. Like, suddenly I understood why my young self needed to numb. I understood why Bronson needed to numb. It was because we were tired of never belonging to ourselves and always pretending. Like, drugs and alcohol felt like a home I never knew before, and they erased the unbelonging. Before, I thought I just wasn't good. Like, I wasn't a good girl. That's why I drank, and that's why I did drugs, and because I wasn't good. And now, in that moment, I realized clearly it was because I was living a life that wasn't my own. And it was painful for me to exist in it. And it was so painful that, of course, I reached out for something to numb the pain. And what I came to discover was that I wanted to deeply belong there. And the pack of the ward was, it's like a built-in buddy system. You move anywhere and immediately you have a group. It takes you in under their wing and you're never alone. And there's a deep sense of community and service and brotherhood. And none of that is wrong. It's actually what is missing in our, like, today's society. But something became utterly clear to me that to fit into the pack, to belong to that pack, I couldn't belong to myself. I had to abandon myself. And Brené Brown has a book on belonging and fitting in, and you guys should read it. It's so good. But yeah, it came down to the fact that suddenly I could see that to fit into the community I was raised in meant I had to abandon a lot of parts of myself for a lot of years. And just, I didn't even know myself. I wouldn't allow myself to get to know me. And Mormons always say that when a member falls away, it's because they want to sin or they don't have a strong testimony. But it wasn't me. I actually did most of my sinning while I was a member of the church, which is crazy and funny and ironic to me now. But, like, it's crazy for me to realize that I sinned so much because of the shame that it caused me. Like, I drank and did drugs, and love was like a drug to me. And all this is Bronson too, you guys, because at our core, we never belonged there. It was the only way we were taught that we could ever be good or happy. was the only way we could be with our family, so we abandoned ourselves to fit in the Mormon mold. This was such a major aha moment for me, admitting to myself that I never felt I belonged there. And no, I didn't want to sin. I was actually over all that shit. And yes, I actually do have a crazy testimony of Christ. And no, I'm not lazy. I'm doing more work than half the other people here. Like, and I wasn't offended. I mean, the bishop was weird, but it didn't offend me. And I started realizing that for my whole life, it felt like I belonged to churchianity instead of Christianity. It was like the worship of the organization itself, worship of the church that I was born into, was equal to the worship of Christ. They were the same, neck and neck. So churchianity, man, it's a thing. I experienced it. And because I knew more about Joseph Smith than I ever did about Christ's time traveling around teaching the gospel. I knew more about the prophets of the church and the organization than I did about Christ's life. And that's just the damn truth. And I know I might be weird here. I'm not. Don't. Mormons are going to get pissed at me because they're going to be like, well, that's just you and Mormonism. You're probably right. Like, you're probably right. This is probably why it wasn't a good fit for me. But I don't know. This was me in Mormonism. I knew more about the church than I did about Christ. Because Mormonism to me, it was like a special club, like special club mentality, like keeping in good standings with the club, getting kicked out of the club, like then throw God and heaven and your children's souls into the mix. And it's a weird vibe. And it didn't feel good for me. It didn't feel right. I didn't feel right raising my kids in this, so full of fear and so many black and white lines in the sand and so focused on stupid things with like cultural shame and weird hoops to continuously just jump through just to be worthy of God's blessings. Because I felt like my kids and I were worthy as we were. I looked at my kids and I could see that they were good. I looked at my husband and I could see that he was good without all the hoops. And I didn't feel scared for the first time that I wasn't doing enough. Or maybe I didn't have to jump through all the hoops to feel worthy in the eyes of God. And I don't know why it works for literally millions of other people. There are millions of Latter-day Saint members right now. And it works well for them, but just not for me. Because I see so many families like thriving in this structure. And I gave it my all. I can say that confidently. But my truth is that this type of structure actually inhibits my relationship to God. And I don't know why. I think it's that like that saying, like one man's medicine is another man's poison. And no, I don't think Mormonism is poison. But I think it's medicine for most people, just not mine. It's not my medicine. And I've learned to accept that. So I sat just by myself with all of this information for a long time. And when I finally decided to go to Bronson and like confess it all, I was really scared. A lot of Mormons who have had to do this can relate to me. I know, like when you confess your real feelings to your spouse. But I'll be honest with you, he celebrated. He was so relieved that I felt this way because he did too. He just never dared say it aloud. Like if I didn't say this to him, he would have been a 99-year-old man and kept this in. Like he would have kept the secret to himself. He needed me to open that door. And for a lot of Mormon couples who leave, this isn't the case. Because for a lot of people, this means divorce. But Bronce reacted as if this was his life's biggest wish. Like he would never dare speak a word of it because neither of us knew a different way. But the transition out for him was so seamless. He shined. And it was truly like he was set free, and that helped me a lot. And he started opening up and like going deep into his memories. And he said, he confessed that he knew since the age of 7 that it wasn't for him, which is crazy because he has so very few vivid childhood memories. But one of his most vivid was sitting in primary class on a Sunday. And in primary, they sing this song. It's called I Hope They Call Me on a Mission. I have to drink water. I'm dying. I've been talking for forever. Okay, it's called I Hope They Call Me on a Mission. And he sat with his friends after and the primary lady was like, where do you guys want to go on your missions? And all the friends were like, I want to go to Tahiti. And he just was like quietly to himself being like, man, I hope they don't call me on a mission. Like, I don't want to go. And he, which is crazy. He always knew. He just pretended to. And long story short, we left. And I was mad and angry and grieving for a while. And only after I knew my soul was not in it for good any longer, which took me a minute, not Bronze, but me, yes, it took me a minute. I allowed myself to do some digging, some real digging, like, and I'm good at it. But I went into historical facts that were not church approved, and it confirmed all the unrest I had all along the way. Like, my soul always knew. And the truth to me is that no organization, no walls, no house, no building, no authority is ever needed to act as a middleman between me and God ever again. So now it's just me and God and Christ. We make a triangle. It's the strongest shape on earth. They call it the golden triangle. Like, nothing else is needed. There are no hoops that I need to jump through. No outside authority. I am loved and accepted and valued exactly as I am today. I am worthy of love and blessings and friendship and success and divine guidance. And most of all, I am worthy of happiness exactly as I am and just exactly like you are too today. And I would say it's been 5 to 6 years. It's like 6 or 7. I don't know. But it's taken this long to absolutely appreciate the foundation that Mormon, like that being Mormon gave to me as a child. And like I said earlier, I had to step away from it for a minute to like, just, it was, I had to step away from Christianity because it was too tightly intertwined to Mormonism for me. But one random day a while ago, I decided I wanted to read the Bible because I had this epiphany that my entire understanding of Christ had always been through a Mormon lens, and I only knew the bare minimum. I knew that he was born of a virgin. I knew, like, the stable story, like, and then I knew that he preached, and I knew how he died. But, like, I just knew that through the Mormon lens and through other people's interpretations of the Bible or the gospel. So I decided that I wanted to read it and decide for myself what I thought about it all. So I started in Genesis, page 1, chapter 1. And I got all the way to the middle of, I want to say, like, Exodus? I don't know. Before the red highlighted words that Christ himself speaks in the New Testament became too enticing for me. So I skipped the New Testament, like, page 1. And I suggest, if you're interested in this, this is weird, I'm talking about the Bible. But if you do get a Bible, get one with where what Christ says is highlighted, because it's just, hits different. But so now I've read the whole New Testament from start to finish, like a storybook. And it's kind of blown me away, because it's like one of my favorite books, because my whole life I had these ideas of Christ and how he was like perfect and meek and mild. And I'm reading now the words that he says himself in the Bible. And I'm like, whoa, like, okay, this is who you are. Like, now I know him. And the guy is dope. I'm in love with him. Like, yes, he was perfect. But he's also like kind of human. I was so shocked when I would read it and be like, whoa, he's like pissed off. He's frustrated. Like, he would be frustrated with his disciples more than anybody. He would call, I remember he called one Satan once. He was like, get back, Satan. Like, he yelled at him. And he brought a whip into a market at the temple, and he would flip over tables, and he called people out left and right. And what he hated the most were the Pharisees, who were so tradition and rule obsessed that they couldn't see what was in front of their own faces all along, which was the Son of God. Like, he broke all the rules, all of them. He healed people on the Sabbath, which is like working on the Sabbath. So, like, you could not do that back then. Like, he called out false teachings of, like, the highest rabbis, and he was calling them false teachers. Like, I remember one verse that I think healed me entirely from old religious trauma. But he was talking to his disciples, and they were all worried because they were traveling, and it was Passover, and they didn't have any bread without yeast, like unleavened bread. And Christ was like, you guys, like, hello, you're with the Son of Man. Like, you've seen me do miracle after miracle after miracle, and you're stressing about bread, like, you fools. Come on. Like, and what he said next healed me. He said, so what goes into a man's body has not a thing to do with their soul, but whatever comes out of a man's mouth has everything to do with his soul. And so much of my Mormon scarring had to do with my body. what it looked like, how I dressed it, what I put inside of it in all ends. And like so much, I can't even tell you the amount of shame I had about bodies. But that sentence alone, like he just said it out of Christ's mouth. It does not matter. It only matters what comes out of a man's mouth, not what goes in. And there are countless one-liners in there in the Bible that Christ says. And it's like, there's one about marriage too in heaven. And it's this whole story about seven brothers. Each one of them die. They pass down the widow. Like it was like traditional to pass down your widow, which is so weird. And they're like, okay, what do we do? Like, who does the widow go to in heaven? And Christ is like, you guys, chill. It is not like that. And so then that healed all my ceiling fears. So people ask me what helped me coming out. And I know it feels counterintuitive to a lot of LDS people who are leaving, but reading the Bible helped me. So much of Mormonism is about studying their scriptures, the Book of Mormon, and the Bible feels kind of like an afterthought. At least it did for me. I can only speak for myself. But reading the New Testament from cover to cover like a story was incredibly powerful and healing for me. And breath work and journaling and meditation and prayer helped me. Plant medicine made me like new, because in my ayahuasca ceremony, I saw God. And I didn't learn about God or read about God. I experienced God. And I actually went through a transformation. Like I felt what forgiveness feels like. I didn't read about it. Like I felt what real love and compassion and service feel like. For the first time, I understood what faith is like without fear intertwined, like just entangled into it. And religion never gave me that. It couldn't, because how can you just read about this stuff? I think you have to experience it. And I'm not saying you need to do plant medicine. I'm saying I was called to it, but I'll never be the same. Like I experienced it firsthand. I danced that dance. Like I didn't, it changed me. Like God is real. Christ is real. Love is real. Forgiveness and faith are powerful practices. And now it just kind of keeps getting better. It's a painful transition out, but there is healing and light at the end of the tunnel. And I also don't think I could end without talking about Jess. So Jess is my best friend, and that feels juvenile, even saying it loud right now. Best friend. Because what she is she's like my soul friend. And Jess is a devout Mormon woman. And when I left, I was most scared to tell her, because my family, they're stuck to me for forever, like, right? Like they can't choose to leave me. I guess they could leave me. They could. A lot of Mormon kids lose their family, but I knew mine wouldn't leave me. And Jess, though, like I was scared because I knew that a change like this could change our relationship and I didn't want it to change ours. And she did something that no one else did for me back then. And it changed our friendship into what it is now. But what she did for me was she asked me questions. She wasn't afraid of me. She didn't talk about me behind my back. She knew I would never want to lure her out. She was curious. She cared. She honored my beliefs. She still trusted me. And I do all this for her too. Like she's one of the ones I talked about before where I was almost jealous of her faith of in this church, because she finds joy and freedom and truth and community in Mormonism. And like a deep and a real relationship with God. And I honor all of that about her and her faith. And I'm happy for her. Back in the day, I was jealous that she could find it there, genuinely. But the most spiritual conversations I've had as a woman who has been both in and outside of Mormonism, they've been with Jess. And it's because me leaving didn't scare her away. Like she sees me the way God sees me. Still valuable, still trying, still worthy, and that I'm not a bad person. And I think I share this with you in the hopes for others who have had friends leave, or you're scared about your friendships when, you know, or maybe you've had a friend who left and you're uncomfortable. You don't have to stop being their friend. You don't have to distance yourself from them unless you want to. Like, I think that there is a place where we can all more than coexist, like actually share with each other about the differing parts of all of our faith. And instead of it being right or wrong, just honoring it, like respecting our differences, that we all have a different road to travel. And I continue to learn so much from her. I learn so much from the way she is in her faith. Her faith heals parts of me. And I know it's vice versa. I know her faith is strengthened when I share some of my experiences outside of Mormonism with her. It's unconventional. It's not how things have traditionally been done. And I know that. But I just know we don't need to be so scared of our differences or our beliefs. Like, I still like to be included in on Relief Society events with my community. I still love hearing your testimonies of the truthfulness you find in this gospel and like the love that you feel there. And people stopped telling me their spiritual experiences when I left. They stopped sharing their spirituality with me when I left. Nothing made me more sad because I still want to know. I respect you. I want to know you. I just hope that that is reciprocated back to me even when I've expanded outside of my previous religion. And I also have to go here to my listeners who have written to me about this specifically. I've read your messages. I've cried reading your messages. And I just want to say to all of you that it gets better with time and experiences. Have more experiences, expand your faith, and it gets better. But I have a message for those current Mormon members who are struggling with the reality that a loved one has left, because it's a hard pill to swallow, and I know it's hard for you. And I just want you to listen to me. Just listen. Like, really listen to me. Open your heart. Open your mind right now. Because I know you're scared. I know you have so much fear about all of this. I know you probably did everything right. And this is not fair to you that this is happening to your family. And it's messed everything up. It's especially messing with your ideas of how you're going to spend the afterlife and eternity. And I know you think your loved ones don't know happiness like you know happiness. And I know you think that they don't know peace like you know peace. And I know you just want them to be happy like you are. And I know you just want them to feel the surety that you feel. And I want you to know that I believe that you're happy. I believe that you feel peace. And I believe that this faith brings you closer to God. And what I want you to do is stop projecting your life onto your loved ones. Your loved ones aren't you. And I know this goes against everything you've ever been taught, but ask them about why they left, even if you're scared to hear the answer. Don't argue about who's right or who's right. Just ask them how they feel. I know you don't really want to know, but ask anyway. Ask the question, why did you leave? And when they tell you, don't defend the church. This will be a knee-jerk reaction for you. Everything inside of you will want to defend the church. You've been trained to defend the church. But what you need to do next has the potential to heal your relationship with your loved ones that you're so worried about, or divide. And instead of defending the church like you've been trained, just tell them that you're sorry that they experienced it the way that they did. You're so sorry because it caused them pain, maybe confusion. You're so sorry it made them maybe not trust themselves or other people. You're sorry that they don't find God there the way that you find God there. You're just sorry. And you're not sorry because you're sorry because the person you're worried about is in pain. So you're sorry about their pain, not for causing it. You're not taking the blame here. And you're not sorry because the church did it either. You're sorry because they're suffering and they just need to be heard by the people closest to them. So hear them. You don't have to agree with them. And it doesn't mean you condone it. Just hear them. Let them get it off their chest, because it is a part of their healing and yours too. But be curious. Be the thing my bishop told me not to be, because it would destroy my family. I'm telling you, be curious, because it might be the thing that saves yours. Get to know your kids, even your adult children. They're the ones suffering the most. I had a woman in her 50s write into me, and they're suffering. They need their parents too, even at 50. Just love your babies. Even if they do life differently than you do, even when you raise them in a different way than how they're living now, it's okay. The relationship we have with them is all we have with them in this life. Don't ruin it over differing beliefs or lifestyles, or arguing about the afterlife. Just love them. Don't punish them. A lot of Mormon families withdraw their love or blessings or money or trips when their children choose a different choice. Don't punish them. there, it hurts enough. And to listeners who maybe are, right now are in suffering because they left, I just want you to know it gets better. There's hope. Talk to someone. There are therapists right now in Utah who specialize in faith transitions, like specifically, because there's more people than ever right now leaving. So find them. Like, take time to honor your pain. It is a lot to undo. So give yourself grace and lots of time. And know that I love you. I feel you. And know that I'm telling you it will be okay. Because it will. It will be okay. And I'm looking at the clock. This is beyond long. Oh. Okay, so yes, this is beyond long. And I have a vulnerability and a fear hangover. So I'm going to get off now. And maybe I'm just going to give my phone away to my mom for a few days and just have her hold it, because I am scared of whatever's coming next, you guys. So please be nice to me. I love you wherever you are, however you are. I hope you can respect my beliefs too and love me back. Until next time, guys. Peace.